Hey guys, how you doing? This is Restaurant Success Club. I'm Monty Silva, the host. I've got a couple of great people on here. They're good friends of mine, very talented individuals. Jay Ashton from Canada, Scott Turner from across the pond. We're going to get started. We're going to start the conversation. As you begin to listen to this live stream, if you're joining us, please hit join and that will put you backstage and I can bring you up on the stage so that you can share your intent. But the goal of this is not for a couple of talking heads to share their eternal wisdom with you, but it's to be collaborative and create a conversation where, you know, all of us are smarter than, you know, all of us are smarter than, none of us are as smart as all of us. I know that anyone joining this conversation will have value and have something to share. So please, if you're following this live, please join in and I'll bring you into the video screen. If you're super shy and you don't want to do that, that's fine. Continue to listen. But the goal of this is really to incorporate a really great conversation with lots of people that know way more than I do. And collectively, I think it'll be a great conversation. So we're going to start off each week. There is a topic. It is based on an article that I share in my newsletter. If you haven't joined, please subscribe. It comes out on LinkedIn every Monday and it's called Restaurant Success. And it's a great opportunity to start a conversation. And then that following Thursday, today live, we'll talk about whatever that topic is. So the conversation this week is on why the old model P&L just doesn't work anymore and it'll ruin your restaurant if you follow that path. Again, I'm not here to regurgitate what I wrote. I'm here to listen to other people and have other people share their wisdom as well. So we're gonna go around the room with the people that are on right now, introduce yourself and then just kind of share your initial thoughts on why you think the P&L model is not sustainable and not a good thing today. And we'll start with you, Jay. You want to talk about who you are and what you do and then your thoughts.
I like Scott's voice, though. It's got that bloody British accent. That's like you already are smarter with the accent, just so you know, Scott. So I've been in the industry this is my 34th year. In the industry, I've been doing this for a while. I have a couple podcasts, as you know. I actually have two podcasts, one not a podcast show that airs every night. And I've been consulting thousands of restaurants over my career. Created the resource department for Cisco when it comes to the resources and stuff that we provide to hundreds of thousands of customers. So I've been doing that for 17 plus years out of my career based. And I do I write articles, write new stuff, all that stuff as well, all that good stuff. Why I think the question is why I think the P&L is broken. I think the overall industry is broken. And the simplicity of that is the percentage on return on the industry that we all work in. There's the math. It's broken. So the P&L, yes, it's broken. Is the overall industry broken? Yes. There isn't an industry out there that generates the percentages that our people do and our industry does. So when we look at the P&L, hell yeah. Do we look at the industry? Hell yeah. There's some things that needs to be tweaked and adjusted. In a sense of looking at different ways to generate profit through our organizations or our industry. So I think the P&L, yeah, but it's even bigger. I think the industry's also got some tweaks to adjust because you can't keep an industry sustained at 1-2% margin profit. Like, that makes no sense. So you can't sustain that in an increasing environment everywhere.
Yeah, for sure. I see Justin. Justin, I think you're hiding. You're not backstage. If you want to join the conversation, please join and I'll see your backstage and I'll add you to the screen so that you can share. feel free to continue to comment. I love that he loves Scott Turner's accent. Justin, you've got a lot of great things to share as well. So feel free to join backstage and I'll add you to the screen. I'm very glad to hear what you had to say, Jay, and I couldn't agree with you more. The industry needs a lot of revamping, not just the P&L, but certainly, the conversation today is centered around that. And it's some of those things, I'll get back to you later to find out what you think some of the things that are not P&L, they affect the P&L, but they're not P&L specific that you think are kind of ruining things. Scott, I'm super interested in your take coming from the hotel world, going into restaurants and then back to hotels. So if you want to start off first, tell everyone watching who you are, what you do. And then I'd love to hear your perspective because you have a perspective of how the P&L affects restaurants. And you also have a perspective of how hotels look at restaurants as, is it a profit center? Is it a amenity? And kind of share that background. But first, share with the audience what you do, who you are.
Yeah, it's really good to be here. And if I'd have known the English accent that good, I would have moved over to the States when I was 18 and I would have taken a lot more advantage of it than I did when I was here. So, really pleased to be here. Thanks for having me on today. I'm Scott. I am the founder of Auden Hospitality. Over the last couple of years, we're on a mission to make hotel F&B great again because it's got a bit stagnant. People have rested on the laurels a bit too much, and we're here to shake it up and put a bit of perspective into that. Why? I was in luxury hotels for 15 years. I became really frustrated with the way they were seen by senior figures, by owners, and I just felt like I was going to move from business to business and do the same thing in the same four walls because everyone focuses on breakfast and meetings and events, and being real restaurants doesn't really cut it. So I moved to Dubai. Worked in the Middle East for 5 years, and I worked for a consulting company in independent restaurants, and I really saw how restaurateurs think about restaurants and food and beverage very differently. So when I wanted to set up my own business and I wanted to go and look at what I wanted to do, it was kind of looking at how I could bring restaurant mindset, bring it into a hotel environment and help them to think a little bit differently. I've worked 3 continents, 12 countries, probably over 50 openings, restaurants, 4 hotel openings in 3 countries. So quite a bit of experience globally. Why is the P&L broken? Because the P&L, as we see it, and the P&L reviews as we listen to them, are stuck in the 1980s. Times moved on. We need to be much quicker. We need to be much more agile. We have data now at our fingertips because we have technology there to do it. And if we look at the P&L, if we take the classic P&Ls that we did, so say in hotels, when I was in the hotel world, I worked for a Saudi investment company in independent restaurants towards the end of my kind of career in corporate hospitality. We used to spend days doing presentations on the P&Ls that came out probably 12 to 15 days after the end of the month anyway. We used to spend days in presentations what the numbers said and why. And basically we used to have to try and cover our ass because the budget that had been set by people above were far too high and we just couldn't achieve them. So we were basically covering our ass every month trying to work out what was going on. And we were never proactive. We were never really focusing on what we could do to improve because we were too busy doing presentations and being reactive for people to then go and share it further up the chain from their side. But, for me, Monty, I can get data on any of the businesses I work with right now. I can get it up now and I can get month to date. I can get versus last year. I can get, everything at my fingertips, sales mix, which server is the best server, which how many covers I've done, how much spend I've got. I can go into 7 rooms, my reservation system. I can tell you my average check per booking source that comes through. So why do I need to wait until the 15th of the next month to start talking about last month? I can do it today for yesterday, for last month, and I can be much more proactive by looking at what the trend is saying to me here today. I can have much more collaborative conversations with the people that I work with. I can get the finance guy involved. I can do a lot more things proactively now than what we used to do when we didn't have those systems. We had to, you know, the accounts teams had to do all the reconciliation. It did take time to produce. And they were the masters of the data because they were the ones who were seeing it all the time because it wasn't available. Now, if you don't have that data available to your ops team, back to Jay's point, there's probably that's the reason why you're sitting at 1% and 2% margin on the bottom line, because people aren't seeing the data quick enough to be able to react and see those marginal gains that can improve it. So fundamentally, that's why I think the P&L review and the P&L model is broken, because it's just not moved with the times. It's not proactive enough. It's too reactive. So it's not setting people up for success.
Yeah. So Chris Frawley has joined the conversation. Chris has a number of restaurants down in the Florida Gulf side, some phenomenal restaurants. If you're not following Jay or Scott or Chris, you definitely should be following them. And for Chris, you should definitely get down and see his restaurants. They're absolutely spectacular. And so his question is, can you give examples of being more up to date and agile? So to your point, Scott, this isn't just a question for you, so Jay can jump in too, but to Chris's question, and you kind of touched on it, by the time you're looking at the P&L, it's history, things have already occurred. So can you give examples of how you could create a more agile, quick response profit and loss statement that can be adjusted to very quickly, rather than learning from the mistakes at the end of the month and applying them to a future P&L? Can you kind of share what you think some examples of being more agile and up to date is? And then Jay, after that, if you've got something you want to jump in and share as well, that'd be great. Great question, yeah, Chris.
Yeah, it's a brilliant question. And, you know, if we talk to our mutual friend, Rick Smith, right now, he tells you that this is one of the big things that operators and restaurateurs aren't doing, which is getting data, putting it into easy and digestible format that operators can look at every single day. What do I mean by easy and digestible? Two things in my experience. One is a traffic light system, red, for you're in trouble, orange for it's okay, but you're at risk, green is perfectly fine. People understand traffic lights. Your people will understand traffic lights. The second one is graphs. There's nothing better that shows increase or decline than a graph over a period of time. So how can you get more up to date and make it more agile? For me, being more agile is about making it more digestible for your teams. So traffic lights or graphs. The other one is how can you get that data and how can you consolidate it so that you can get it real time? And, you know, there's a lot of EPOS systems that do it just for the EPOS thing. So you can get on there and you can see what your, you know, let's take a Micros, a Toast, a Lightspeed, for example. You can go on and you can see what the sales mix is versus same time last week versus same time last year. But the real power that you can do is how you can try and get all of your data into one place. So sales, labor, inventory, you know, keep going down the P&L and seeing how much you can get into there. And when I was working for the Saudi investment business, we were running 85 restaurants across 4 countries, and we had to consolidate all our data to be able to manage those businesses effectively. So we tickled with Power BI. It took too much resource to do it. So we found a business that I still work with today, which is called Tenzo. They're based out of the UK, but they are in Canada, they're in the US. And they feed into all your systems, feed into them. They're like a central ERP. So everything was in every day. I was getting my end of day reports, including handovers for the team, in one email for all the sites that easily broke everything down. I was seeing labor cost percentage. I was seeing the wastage per day. Then I'd get a weekly flash that consolidated all that data into weekly flash. And then I was getting it by month as well. And I could set parameters on there that said, okay, I want the revenue from yesterday, but I also want it week to date versus last week and over the last 13 weeks. And I could change all that data into graphs. So I could see store one, for example, I could see the revenue and I could track it back over 13 weeks as a graph, and I could see whether revenue was increasing or declining. And that's what I mean about being more up to date and agile, is how can you use the technology that's out there in the market to bring all the data in that makes it at your fingertips. And, you know, one of the things we found in the business that I was working in, I was COO for the business, was because now you're using so many different platforms, because you're going for best in class. So you'll have an EPOS system, you might have an inventory system, you know, not everyone's using Restaurant 365, for example. Operators weren't going into all those systems because they were either forgetting the passwords, they needed 65,000 logins to do it. So how can you give them one login that they go into every single day and it starts becoming part of their day culture and they start using that information? So how can you bring it more up to date? Find a tech platform out there that can bring you data at your fingertips really easily without lots of resource going into it and lots of people. And then how do you make it more agile? You make sure that data then, when it comes to your fingertips, isn't a huge set of numbers on a spreadsheet, but it's in traffic lights, in graphs, and it's easy digestible for your team. That would be my advice.
Great. There's a couple more really great comments, but I want to get Jay's take on, you know, giving examples of being more up to date and agile. And, you know, to your point, Scott, you're talking about using something like Tenzo that helps your tech stack work together without having to replicate, duplicate, and waste a lot of time trying to pull separate information together. So thanks for sharing that. You have shared that with me before, and it's something that I want to look into and check out Tenzo. Jay, what do you think? You've been on the operational side. You work with Cisco. You've got a podcast where you talk to a lot of really smart people. What are some examples you have of being more up to date for P&L and more agile?
Well, I think exactly like Scott said, it's using the text that's out there. I'm also a big believer just on the communication. And Scott said, you know, using signal lights, which is great. I've kind of used that format before as well, and it works really well. So I think it's really around, like, I'm big on making sure you have a system in place. There's open communication. So you understand what those numbers are telling you. Like, to Scott's point, you show up and it's all numbers and stuff. And I've seen it thousands of times where we'll look at a graph and I'll be like, hey, that's great. It's, what is it telling us though? Like, what is the information that those numbers are telling us of the indication of where we need to improve the business that is actually going to move the numbers, not just change a situation. So that's where I really believe that open communication dialogue, I think there has to be, like we used to do it every morning. We would review the numbers of our locations, and then, you know, night there was all the numbers came out at night before you opened up, you're reviewing them, looking at them. And then we also looked over trends or anything that followed into that, but we had to decipher, if that's the word, those numbers into what actions that we need to do to improve the business. And that's where I find a lot of people look at those, or they'll start seeing a trend and not react to adjust in those situations to improve those numbers, right? It may be trending in the wrong way. And it's like, hey, it's trending down. Okay, well, we expect it. Like right now, a lot of restaurants are probably having their P&L numbers are probably going down, and they're going, oh, well, it's because of the holidays or people are paying. It's always this way. And I actually challenge the status quo on those is, well, then if we always do it like this, well, then how can we do it differently? And I think we need to look at those situations and understand the numbers. Have those meetings constantly with our teams and have open dialogue to understand what those numbers mean. Because a lot of people don't understand what the numbers mean. and they get stuck on just the numbers. Okay, well, we're only 5% with this net. Well, okay, what's this mean? Or, you know, the numbers are going down in this one area, or we're seeing sales spike in this area. Because it's always not always down too, right? It's not always indication of understanding what the numbers are mean when they go up. What are we doing right, people? What's happening here? You know, can we repeat this? All these different things. But I find that a lot of people may get the numbers, but don't understand the numbers, if that makes any sense. And I think we need to have those conversations, have a team discussion, bring in your management team, sit around and dissect those numbers to understand what's impacting them or what's moving them up or down. And to really look at those areas to improve them. And I think to Scott's point, like I've seen so many restaurants where a month later, they're trying to make corrections of the month before. Well, that's redonkulous, like, right? You know, especially when it comes to waste or theft, right? Like you probably have a theft problem if you're doing that and you probably don't even know it and you'll never probably catch it. And I think we need to look at those things more and more. I think back to the point of looking at P&Ls, like what's broken in these things is that, like to Scott's point, he's saying 80s. I'm saying 1930s, dude. We've been doing the same model in the P&L. Probably even earlier than that, 1910, 1912, 17, 1920. We've been doing this for over 100 years, I'm going to say. This same P&L model. And looking at making a decision that the business is good based on a percentage that tech companies are telling us is right or wrong. So I think we need to look at that as well and really pull it apart and find different opportunities to understand our business.
Yeah. Is that great? That's great.
It's funny, right? I've shared, and back to Jay's point, I've shared an example previously where I went into one business and we were going through data as we always do. And we do two things when we go in. We look at the data and we look at what it tells us, and then we speak to people, because Jay's absolutely right. Data only tells you so much. It helps guide you to the conversations, but it doesn't give you the answers. And we had a conversation and I got told repeatedly in this business, our beverage cost is fine. Our beverage cost is good. Okay, fine. So we started delving into it. Your beverage cost is good. They didn't have an inventory system. Okay. They didn't have an inventory system. They were doing everything manual and Excel spreadsheets and all the rest of it. The same guy who did the Excel ordering, did the Excel reconciling, and then produced the stock take. And I just looked and I said, how do you know it's good? Because you've assumed the percentage you're telling me is good, but you don't know if it's good. And I said to them, you know, I'm with another business who have exactly the same beverage cost as you and sell a bottle of beer for 25% less than you because it's a different style of business. So that would tell me that the beverage cost is that good. So we need to start looking at how we can analyze the stock takes properly and get purchasing systems in so that we can start really seeing whether that's right by looking at actual and theoreticals and all the rest of it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where sometimes people try and convince themselves that everything is okay, but in reality, they're not looking at things properly to do it. So I think it's, there's a comment in there about, and that's what made me bring this up, about doing inventories monthly or even annually. Like any business that's doing an inventory annually is setting themselves up for failure in my experience. You know, it's back to looking at why the P&L is antiquated, and same as what Jay's saying, monthly is too late. By the time the month has gone, the P&L comes out, you've looked at why those things are happening, you've probably 6 weeks, and then it just starts getting worse and worse and it takes longer to recover. So this is one of the big things that I know from hotels to restaurants. Hotels do stock takes maybe once a month, but generally once a year. They run on food flash. Restaurants that operate were doing inventories weekly. We knew our P&Ls, we knew our wage costs, we knew our inventory, our stock takes weekly. So we were able to react much quicker. And that's coming back to that whole piece about how, why should we be more up to it? Why should we be more agile? Because now we have the systems that help us do that much easier. You know, we have things integrated into Xero. barcode scanning for inventory systems now. We have GPS check-ins for the staff to check in and check out on shifts, so people aren't having to do more timesheets anymore. We've got all these systems that can speed up process now, and we just need to understand that they're there to help. They're not there to hinder, and they can impact the business in a positive way. And you know, back to Jay's point, we shouldn't be doing things that we've been doing for years and still doing them now when tech has moved on. It's
the other thing too, Scott. I want to touch on this as well. Scott, is I think a lot of restaurants, and this is what drives me crazy too, is that we, because every restaurant necessarily has its own ecosystem in a way when it comes to financial aspects, right? So a restaurant in Florida at this corner, on this street, with this clientele, this audience, or, you know, all these different ways to look at it, will have a different P&L percentage at the end of it in a restaurant a kilometer away, right? Like we broad brush so much of the industry so many times when we look at using a P&L to determine the success out of it. I very rarely, I have never ran into usually an analysis prior to look at specifically the environment and the location to determine the success rate or the percentage those restaurants should be generating based on multiple factors. And today, using AI and the ability to look at the factors for those specific locations, you can determine what your percentages should be based on multiple, probably 50, I think it's like 50 plus on some of these operations, based on 50 touch points to determine what the success rate or what the percentages are within those locations. I rarely see that. Scott, I'm sure you haven't, you rarely see a restaurant saying, this is based on all these analysis, what we should be doing. And I think a lot of places would probably, because there's a lot of guessing or assumptions in determine what the success rate should be for that restaurant, that location. Most people are like, well, if they did it in Florida at this quarter, I can do it in New York on this corner, and we're going to get the same percentages. And really, I don't, we need to look at that. I think that's, you know, way before even getting into P&Ls, is looking at what those determinations, but putting those factors into our, into what we're looking at when we're deciding if the restaurant's successful or not. So yeah. I don't know if that makes any sense, but I think we need to look at it way before and incorporate that into the plan.
Yeah, so there's a comment, some comments by Mike Maloney I'm going to get to in a second. I want to touch quickly on what Chris just mentioned in the comment, and then I'm going to speak something really quickly to a question Jared has. So Chris, by the way, one of these times you should be up on stage sharing your wisdom as well. But P&Ls need to be worked on daily, absolutely. Period. GMs need to be trained to do this. Chris has been doing this with accuracy since 1995. Training is the key. Waiting for the finance department to send the P&L on the 15th is like a hunter shooting a shot into the woods and saying, I hope something runs into that. That's a great analogy. So, being able to look at, and this is going to answer Jared's question about what tech are you using for reporting. Jay mentioned Restaurant 365. Mm-hmm. That's a great system because, to Chris's point that he just made and to the points you guys have made, if you're waiting for the end of the month or a bi-monthly inventory to figure out your numbers, it's a day late, dollar short, and you're hoping that deer runs across where you shot. But by using something like Restaurant 365, you're entering your invoices daily, right? You have sales that you can input daily, and so you can run a P&L on any given day. Now, is it going to have your lease in there and certain things that are a once a month expense? No. But you're going to be able to see what your food cost for the week looks like or the day looks like. Obviously that's going to be skewed if you just got a huge order off the truck, you know, and you're not counting that, but you have the invoice. Then obviously you need a few days to let those sales kind of balance out that purchase. But I would say, you know, every 3-4 days, you should get a fairly clean record of what your P&L is looking like. So, Jared, to answer your question, there are a number of systems. I use Restaurant 365 a lot. I highly recommend it. There's other things out there as well. Mike Maloney made a comment. He's got a few comments I'm going to pop up here. He left the industry after 40 years because of exactly what we're talking about today. So let me talk about something that's on my article in the newsletter this week. I basically talk about how for so long when I was growing up, and Mike, you probably were there, Chris, you know, Jay, Scott, you guys have probably been all there. You got percentages beat into your head that you've got to run. This is your labor cost. This is your food cost. This is your beverage cost. You got to hit these prime costs. You got to hit this controllable. And so it creates this mentality of cut, 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 cut. But the reality is the best way to manage your P&L is to focus on sales, because sales is going to be the cash flow for your organization. And the more you build that top line, yes, you need to control all of the costs along the way, but your first priority should be driving sales, because if you're not driving sales, you're shrinking the box month after month after month. You cut labor. Now you're not giving as good a service. The food's not getting out as fast. You can't flip the tables. You're on a wait. People leave because the wait is too long. You're not giving great service, so people aren't coming back. You're not giving the server time to sell and build the check, so your check per average is down. And so there's a lot of things, and there's a specific question I'm going to ask you, Scott, in a second regarding sales, because you've shared some interesting things with me in the past. But that's part of what I wrote about in the article in my newsletter. Again, if you don't subscribe to that, please do go back and look on my LinkedIn page. I think I posted it on Monday, every Monday. And that's going to always be the conversation for this. Mike, you're in the audience. You're obviously watching because you put some comments. Same thing with you, Jared. Same thing with you, Chris. If you join and add yourself to the backstage, I can bring you up here if you want to physically be part of the conversation. Mike then goes on to say, the best company experience that taught me and gave us more immediate information was covering the financial information weekly. Many companies started doing inventory monthly or even just annually. The big two, labor and cost of sales, could be well over 50% of the expenses. We learned to understand what the numbers are saying to us. A great book called Managing by Harold Green that says knowing the numbers will make you free. So thank you for sharing that book. I'll have to check that out, Mike. Mike also says...
Sorry, Monty, just on that though, because that's a great point by Mike, to be fair, it's super important, isn't it, to understand what your break-even point is, whether you operate one store or 20 stores. You need to know what that benchmark is, because that's then going to help you for the rest of the P&L. Back to Mike's point on that, we always worked our break-even, and we always worked on the kind of cost of sales payroll percentage to be around 50-55%. If it was around 50-50%, our revenues were coming in where we needed them to be, we kind of knew we were going to be all right based on the lease and property model that took for most of the stores. That's QSR operations. And I think, you know, back to that P&L model is you know, so many people who probably listen to this who are operators are probably sitting there right now with unachievable budgets, because it's just the nature of the business that we're in now. And I've had that conversation with two different people today. And so essentially, the minute you submit an unrealistic budget, it's pointless looking at the budget, because all you're going to do is beat people with a stick. So what is it? Is it growth on last year, or is it making profit, or do you start? I would always say you start at break even, then you work up, because if you're not costing people money, it makes every conversation a bit easier. I made lots of comments when I'm doing my LinkedIn posts, and I talk about why we should focus on revenue and not profit. And every time I put that comment, for some reason, I get bashed on comments about it. What are you on about? You don't focus on profit. We're not focusing on profit. It's like, let's think about profit, right? Let's think about what that is on the P&L. Profit on the P&L is the one number you cannot directly affect. So, because the reason is profit is a formula of revenue cost, right? So if you focus on that little number at the bottom, the profit, you're never going to do anything because all you're going to do is focus on cost. But Marty, is the only way to be sustainable and to grow is to focus on revenue, because everything else there with discipline becomes so much easier, because it's not easier to run a busy restaurant, as you know, than it is to run a quiet restaurant. So focusing on revenue, focusing on sales, the core way to make sure that the profit is delivered at the bottom. Super thing. One of the big frustrations I always found is working in hotels is that P&L reviews were done by finance people. Finance people's skill is cost, right? It's cost, not revenue. So where do they put their focus? It's on cost. So we were running certain businesses that had revenue issues. They would brush over the revenue issues because they didn't have the knowledge to challenge the sales and marketing director. And then they'd go through cost line by line with the ops person to understand where we could cut cash to get the profit back up because the revenue wasn't coming in. That's where some of these P&L reviews integrated, because the wrong people are doing the right conversations at the wrong time. And if you had people focusing on revenue and where you can bring it in, exactly what you were saying, what are your guest scores? What are your employees? What's your employee satisfaction? Not once a year on a review, but every single day, because that's, you can do that now with some of the new tech systems, Harry and things like that, that can rate the shit and things. So if you were having finance people having really valuable collaborative conversations going, listen, we've seen this flagged up in the numbers the last couple of weeks. Where's the issues? How can we help? How can we help you do things better? Because I still see it now, some of the conversations that I had with finance people over certain things. And, you know, you need four POs to get a knife and fork signed off, and then they wonder why the guest satisfaction isn't there, right? And Monty, we've had this conversation about hotels. No, it's red tape process kills innovation, agility, and success, basically. And so I think, you know, back to Jay's point, you're starting to get me on a rant now. There's a lot more things broken than the P&L, because the P&L
I'm going to share something really quick, and then I have a follow-up question for you, Scott, and then I want to hear Jay's take on building the top line. So in a recent article I wrote for FSR magazine for Shift, called Shift Happens, in my column, I talk about having an abundance mindset versus a scarcity mindset. And here's the reality of the situation. If you can build a bigger pie, then when you slice it up, everybody gets a bigger piece, right? If you have a scarcity mentality, you're so focused on cutting that you're shrinking that pie, and it's getting harder and harder to manage. And then you've got to do deals, stupid deals, to get people in the door, you know, crazy deals where you're giving the house away and you're spending dollars to chase pennies, right? So that's an important part of, you know, the idea of building sales. I also mentioned in that you don't take percentages to the bank. I would rather take 50K and make a bank deposit than 30K every day. And if it requires me to run a little bit higher costs because I'm selling wine and I'm selling steaks as opposed to, you know, a salad and a beer, then so be it. My costs are going to be a little bit higher, but I'm driving so much more revenue to the bottom line. And you don't go to the bank and you go, you know, you walk into B of A, you go up to the teller and you've got a little deposit slip. There's a spot for the dollar sign. There's no spot for percentage. I'd like to deposit 10%. You know, nobody does that, right? So so that's a lot of what I talked about. And to answer Chris's question from earlier, the focus shifting to the top of the line as important as the bottom of the line. Bottom line is so, so important because it's that number that's going to drive future growth. Julianne Gomez, I met, we had a conversation yesterday, or I think it was yesterday. It was yesterday. And she works with Restaurant 365 down here in St. Petersburg. And she said, you are able to put in your lease in the Restaurant 365 spreadsheet. You can add that line, whether or not you've paid that or not. So you can get an updated, accurate P&L daily, in some cases, even every 15 minutes. So that's good to know. Jay, conversation on building sales.
You know, I think the simplicity of it all, and it pretty much what Scott said, is I focus on foot traffic. That's it. If you don't have people walking through that door, then like, because that's associated to sales, like it's the connection to sales, but I need foot traffic. That's all I want. Starbucks does this right now. They're focused on foot traffic, right? They need people coming into that store, gracing that store door, going through those doors. That's all I want. And everything else is after that. If I don't have anyone in there, I can have the best cost on a P&L like you've ever seen, but I won't have anyone in that restaurant.
Right.
And then that almost blends into the marketing sales conversation that's been around for the last 100 million years. What's more important, marketing or sales or marketing, right? And it's really, to me, being in marketing, is that I need people crossing that door, and they may spend, and then from there it just comes into the sales side. If you don't have it, you can have the best numbers and everything else. I've seen people jeopardize so much business and so much opportunities to get the best numbers on a P&L. They have no one walking through the door.
Yeah.
And I think the simplicity of it, Monty, is looking at P&Ls and understanding that through, you know, your CFO, or if you have someone looking at your numbers for you, your banking guy. It's easy to cut costs. It's hard to grow sales, right? It is so easy to cut costs. And we see that in governments today. It's easy to raise taxes. It's hard to not raise taxes and generate profit, right? And I think that's where we need people to think differently when it comes to this, and not just take the, hey, they've done it this way, or we've always done it this way, or it's easy this way, to really change and challenge the status quo. But I really focus on people gracing through those doors and focusing from there. And then from there, we work on the amount of money we can get out of them and the best experiences we can get out of them. Yeah. Right. So other than that, like that's where I think, Scott, you said, you know, you look at the bean counters, be careful. Because they'll want to chop stuff left and right, opposed to let's generate sales. Let's bring in money. 100%. It's easy to cut. Like, it's really easy to cut.
Yeah,
it's really easy to lay off people too.
It's not easy to cut and still maintain the level of execution that you just mentioned, Mike is mentioning below. It's easy to cut a body, but that's not always the right answer. Sometimes it's shaving 15 minutes here, 15 minutes there. Not hacking, you know, major parts of the business, because that's just a spiral downwards for sure.
We see this in organizations today, that when, you know, the P&L and the numbers go to south, we first decide if we have to lay off people. Okay, who do we have to lay off? Right? And because it's easy. It's unfortunately, but it is easy to balance the books by reduction of headcount, opposed to what do we do, folks, to think outside the box to generate more profit so we don't have to let anyone go. That takes more energy. That takes more thought. That takes more creativity. And we tend to go the other way.
Yeah. Scott, you and I had a conversation probably 3-4 weeks ago, something like that, where you were talking about when you're working with your clients, and you're looking at seating, right? How many people you can seat in the restaurant, and then turns, and how many seats during the course of a day are left empty, where, you know, it's 10 seats this hour, it's 30 seats this hour, and then getting the operator to look at that lost revenue opportunity. You know, you said you have clients that are like, yeah, we're doing great in sales. We did $3 million or $5 million. But then you show them, look at how much money you're leaving on the table, because at 2 o'clock you have nobody in your restaurant. Or can you kind of talk about your strategy and your conversations with your clients in regards to not only understanding that you've got a seating capacity, but also the missed opportunity, which goes hand in hand with what Jay just talked about?
Yeah, 100%. So when we go into restaurants, we like to put 7 rooms in fairly quickly. Number of different reasons. The primary reason is that the reporting is substantially better than a lot of the others on the market in our experience. I'll tell you why. 2 reasons. One, we have they integrate into your EPOS, which means you can pull all the spend data for all your guests into your guest profiles, which gives you a mountain of knowledge that helps with retention, that helps with CRM and outreach and things like that. But what it does do is it does 2 things. First of all, we use 2 reports mainly with our people. So F&B directors, F&B managers. We don't spend a lot of time, in all honesty, on revenue. We touch on it. We touch on it versus last week, last month, everything we've talked about. 2 metrics that we really focus on is, one is booked by, and we really go in and we see where the traffic is coming from. And then more importantly, because we're pulling the sales data from the EPOS, we see which one of those are producing the best average spend. And we double down on the ones that are working. Now, the ideal scenario is you have one platform. Let's take Google Reserve. Loads of booking and the spend is really high. Or you might have a third-party booker that produces a really good number of reservations, spend actually quite low. And we really focus on the ones that are doing both and see how we can double down and get more bookings from those people. And then we use the other ones a little more strategically when we need to do a bit of impact marketing. So for this month, for example, push some of the third parties that have lower spend and try and do a bit of filler with it. So booked by source is really important. From there, we then delve into cancellations and no-shows. So again, we start looking at, you know, who are the ones who are producing bookings that cancel, and how long do they cancel before, and how much notice are we getting? So how much notice are we getting to then fill those seats again? And then we go in and, for example, we had one recently here in the UK, got a platform called The Fork, produced loads of bookings, but we were also getting loads of cancellations last minute. So we extended the cancellation policy so that we're getting time to refill those tables. So really important to start looking at those type of things to really start yielding the restaurant better. Which brings me on to the second one, which is when revenue directors in hotels look at bedrooms, they look at it as stock and they look at it as inventory. Now, it's much simpler in a hotel, right? You have, say you have 100 keys in a bedroom, you have one night, if you fill it 100%, you can't turn tables, you can't do anything with it, it's really easy. But they still look at it in terms of yield and inventory. So what 7 has is a report called utilization. Utilization is essentially you put in there, when you're setting up the reservation system, how many covers you can do at any time, and how many times you can turn that table and how long people will sit in that seat for. So you are, you know, essentially potential covers per night that's built into the system that then goes into this report. What the report then does is it's your actual covers and works that out as a percentage. We went into a business that said they were doing really well. When we ran the report on 7 rooms, after a month of them being on 7 rooms, the utilization rate was 60%. And my question to the FB director was, you think restaurant performing, but is 60% a good number if I said this to you before we had a look at this report? And he said, I said, okay, so your average, your restaurant isn't doing well, it's doing average because you're leaving 40% of covers on the table. So how do we start double down on the people bringing you the reservations so that we can get that utilization report up? And every week now we analyze that utilization report and we look at where maybe squeeze times. So for example, on weekends, people are coming in and having one course, two courses, over three courses. So we've reduced the table time so we can get an extra sitting in. So we're starting to try and get those busier days, more people through on those busier days. And we use that report really to strategically manage the restaurant effectively. So yeah, two different metrics that in all honesty, when I was an operator, I never used, but through the power of tech and using Seven Rooms now, it's really helped with that from there. So yeah, some really good metrics. But you know, back to Jay's point about footfall, 100% agree with him. Footfall is the master, you know, focus on local community and that will bring it in. And Justin's obviously listening to this and he's the master of sharing knowledge and nuggets on local marketing. One thing I want to share with people, which I would say 80-90% of clients I work with overlook, is when it gets to Christmas in the UK, we have people like Selfridges, we have people like Harrods, right? You guys over there have Macy's, Bloomingdale's and all the rest of it. What do the guys use to attract people into the store? It's the windows. So yeah, don't underestimate the power of the sidewalk. One post I always do, and I repurpose it because people do. How can you make your restaurant as obvious as possible to people walking past on the sidewalk? Use your windows, use air boards, use things outside. How can you bring people in? How do you make your restaurant really clear? We ran a restaurant in Covent Garden. It was a Chinese restaurant. And it didn't have a particularly Chinese name. It was a brand from New York. And even though it was in Covent Garden, wasn't doing particularly great because people just didn't understand what it was. We put modern Chinese restaurant on the front, on the sign, underneath the name. And all of a sudden, people suddenly started walking in because people, it was really easy for them to understand what it is. And it seems like such a simple thing to do, but making your restaurant clear from the outside to people, utilizing that space because you're paying rent on it. So instead of it just being nice windows people can look out of, how do you maximize it? We've worked with other businesses where we've put what we serve on the windows. We did a British pub. We had lunch, brunch, dinner, roasts on the window and text. So people, like, it really obvious what it was, but utilize your real estate because people on that footfall, on that sidewalk, need to know who you are so they can come in, because the gym is king.
That's great. That's great information. So Sean Walchep has put a question up there. Sean is actually, all three of us know Sean. We're all friends. Sean has a barbecue company and a media company, and it's actually one and the same. Cali Barbecue Media owns barbecue restaurants in San Diego and the surrounding area. And he's also a foremost authority on how to tell your story. And he would be a great part of this conversation, especially for building sales. Sean, if you go backstage, I can pop you up on the screen. But if you are shy and want to stay where you are, that's fine. His question is, but I've never known Sean to be shy. So Sean, pop up there. What's the new restaurant P&L? So what we shared before is more agile, quicker response, using the tech tools needed to be able to see the data quicker, focusing more on the top line so that you can drive the bottom line easier, taking money to the bank, not percentages. But as far as what are new revenue line items you are seeing, obviously he can speak to, I think he runs and operates every third party delivery system platform humanly known to man. I think he has 7 or 8 different platforms that are delivery services that he uses, and he wants to be the Amazon of barbecue. So being able to get that out very timely, is that a a separate line on the revenue side that is undervalued and we're not really focusing attention on? And is there any other line that you would add to the revenue stream? And we'll start with you, Jay.
So it's funny. We just talked about this on one of my shows the other day. Scott, I'm waiting for your reaction on this when I say it, is that we invented a dollar store franchise model for restaurants where we could actually sell items $1 to $2 to $3 on a menu. And we had to really rewrite the business model of our industry, you know, taking possibly some ideas or even influence from what Sean's done, including media and other means to balance the books through social or using social platforms. Like you said, signs on the side of the windows. I'm like, that's advertising on the side of the windows for me, that we can generate $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 of revenue for my business because I have a physical building. I have a physical building. I can actually use that physical space to generate additional profits into my business to offset some of those costs. So when I look at some of the P&L additional lines that we can add on there, what's your plan for your social? You're generating sales coming in from your social platforms. Where's your generated sales coming in from your vendor programs, your advertising on your buildings? We have some crazy places out here in Alberta where people are selling, making $40,000 a month selling advertising in their parking lot for their business, right? Because it's on the walls, right? Or have you went to some of these big suppliers to, you know, not pointing at anyone, but have you went to them to offset some costs or look at some generated profit? They have money to give you to promote or put their signs up or put their stuff up or whatever the case is. Those need to be included, I believe. You can add them into your marketing side of your P&L, but I think we need to look at other and new ways to generate the profits to offset that, or we're going to make these single digits profits forever.
So I've got a client in Illinois, and in Illinois you can have gaming. And so he has, you know, video poker and things like that. That's all free money once you pay for the product. I have a client here in Florida, the back nine, that's got golf simulators that you could charge an hourly rate to use. So there's definitely some, once you pay for the initial cost of things, there's some free money out there for sure. And whether you advertise your own restaurant on the windows and walls of your building and you drive future revenue that way, or you advertise for somebody else on them, they're all great marketing ideas. One of the things that I did when I ran Acme Feed and Seed, we were the 31st highest grossing restaurant in the country. We did $18.5 million a year. We did $1 million in merchandise. I think people undervalue selling merch, you know, because this is a walking billboard that someone paid for to advertise your restaurant. So I think those are some other great ways, along with, you know, driving revenue through third party kind of things. You were going to say something, Jay, and then we'll let.
I was just going to say that I think every restaurant needs a side hustle, right? I think every restaurant in today's world needs a side hustle, not just the people. The restaurant needs a side hustle. So whatever that, because we have traditional side hustle, let's say it's a part of the business now, if it is catering or takeout, but additional side hustles that are generating those profit, like swag, a swag store, right? Or your own beer, right? Or your own, whatever the case is that you're making, using that physical space and those people and that brand. I really think everyone needs a side, and that might help balance the books or get more generated profit out of these people or out of these locations. But I think every restaurant needs a side hustle, as well as a podcast.
Yeah, for sure. Scott, any thoughts on new revenue lines driving that top line?
Yeah, 100%. I think more than a side hustle, honestly, in today's thing, I think every restaurant or outlet, and this is what I always say to hoteliers, every outlet needs five revenue streams. because you're probably only going to have three that are really producing at any one time. And it's something I learned when I set up my own business. Don't just put all your eggs in one basket. So look at your business. How do you get five different revenue streams? That could be lunch and dinner. That could be delivery. That could be takeaway. It could be catering. It could be merch. But get five and focus on one at a time and build them up. I think then... From perspective, I agree with Sean. Get yourself in as many places as possible. Don't worry about the commission, because once you have that customer, how do you convert them into a direct customer? So one-time acquisition, second time onwards is then retention. And that's how we with third-party booking engines for our restaurant. We do go on the third-party bookers. We pay commissions. But what we do is when we get in the restaurant, we get their data and we talk to them and we get them back free of charge through our own channels. So use that way as a source. But everyone here, we order Uber Eats, we order on Deliveroo. There's no getting around it. Like the day of delivery drivers going around on scooters is gone. You have to be on there to compete. So yes, be on every delivery channel going. Catering, I think if you're not doing catering or you don't have a way to do it, it's missing revenue. If a chef tells you he can't do delivery because his food doesn't work in a takeaway box, it's bullshit. There's always a way to make it work in a takeaway box, or you just refine the menu. It's ways to do it. So I think, you know, that for me is another one, especially on catering. Merchandise, look for it. You know, we ran Dominic Ansel Bakery here in the UK. We did lots of catering, and his level of pastry is Michelin star level. And we were doing it in catering. We were doing hundreds of cronuts a day. But what we were doing as well is we were selling lots of books, selling lots of retail, lots of merchandise that pushed the average check up beyond £20 a person, which for a bakery is really good going from an average check point of view. So yeah, there's those there. But back to Jay's point as well is, you know, if you don't have deals with champagne people, with beer people, with spirits people, with the food guys, and you aren't getting money coming in, then honestly, like, you need to go back to the drawing board, because as Jay said, it's, you're leaving cash on the table, and, you know, fundamentally, unless you ask for it, you won't get it. So get in there and hustle and get as much cash as off people as you can, because it's better in your pocket than it is elsewhere.
Yeah. All right, we're going to wrap up the show. Thank you, everyone who joined us, whether you're just listening or you sent in questions. Thank you for that. This is a show that can be, you'll be able to watch it. It is saved on my LinkedIn page, so you can go back and watch the show. If you like it, please share it. Like it, comment. Every week, 2 o'clock, Thursdays, 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, the Restaurant Success Club will be live. We'll be talking about whatever the latest topic is. If you want to know what the latest topic is, please subscribe to my newsletter, Restaurant Success, that I put out every Monday on LinkedIn. Really want to thank the two that joined us on stage, as well as everybody that was watching and asking questions. My name is Monty Silva. I'm a restaurant coach. If you have questions about this and you'd like to talk, feel free to reach out to me. Scott is a, well, I'll let you guys kind of do one more plug of what you do and how someone can get a hold of you. And I really appreciate both of you. I respect you immensely. And I'm so happy that you joined us today and added the value of this show. Again, this show is about none of us being as smart as all of us. And I really value the input that you all shared and the questions that were asked today. So Jay, let's start with you. You want to close it out? Final thoughts, who you are, how to get a hold of you?
I was going to say, Scott, I love your rant. You have the most polite rant ever. I had to say that.
Is that a backhanded compliment?
What's awesome. Rant? Awesome. I obviously wasn't on a full rant.
I know. I love it. You're British in that beautiful accent. I wish I had that. I am British, by the way. I still have the accent. I was going to say, so you can follow me. I have a daily show every night. I also have two podcasts, one with Restaurants Canada called Menu Unplugged, and then I also have one with Cisco here. It's called the Restaurant Podcast Show. And I'm also, like Monty, I write every week on different columns, as well as I do lectures across the country too. So anyways, you can follow me on LinkedIn, Instagram under Canada's Restaurant Guy. That's it. I think that's that. And anything else, Monty, I'm forgetting? I don't think so.
Final takeaway from today?
Think different. Right? Okay. Don't do it the way because we get comfortable with that. Don't get comfortable. And I know you can get comfortable. Let me rephrase that. Don't get comfortable. No one is. And don't accept these numbers that are just not making you money, right? Just because everyone else is, right? So I would say just think differently. Steve Jobs it. Yeah.
Scott.
I'm going to rant again. It's not those who know me and listening to this, like that's not Scott Turner ranting anywhere, shape or form. I try and not swear on these type of things, but I've slipped up a couple of times, but that's fine. I'm British. So think differently 2024 is my hashtag for this year, because we've all got to think differently. Burnt Chef Project being the big one. We've got to look after people better, and we've got to make this industry a better place to be. So where can you find me? LinkedIn is a good place to listen to me rant about F&B and hotels and why it needs to be shaken up and why all hoteliers need to think differently in 2024. I've got a Substack newsletter, F&B Insider. That's where I do a weekly article on there as well. I also do one on LinkedIn. Hospitality huddles, we get people together and have conversations like this, because I honestly think when people get together and put their heads together, you get some brilliant stuff coming out of it. And today's been a brilliant chat, but it always is with you guys anyway. So I appreciate that. Thanks to Sean Walsh, Chef, forever indebted. I'm also on Instagram and TikTok. And one of my big goals for 2024 is to annoy more people, also channels, with my rant about making hotel great again, because it's a mission I am going to achieve. And my other saying for this year is we're going to make 2024 the new heyday for hotel F&B. Because we're all going to think differently. So really appreciate it. I've obviously been in Austria the last couple of weeks, and every day on the Thursday, I've been waking up in the morning to Monty saying, do you want to come on the show today? And I'm like, well, now spare my time, and I think you're already in bed. So I'm really pleased that I got off the plane yesterday and I'm back in sunny UK in -5 and being able to come on. So thanks again, Monty, for inviting me. It's been good fun.
Great. Well, I appreciate you guys coming on again. Subscribe to the newsletter so you know what the topic each week will be. Join us every Thursday, 2 p.m. live on LinkedIn. Feel free to join backstage and I'll bring you up onto the stage. None of us are as smart as all of us. I look forward to more questions, more people sharing their feedback. My takeaway is, based on the column I write for FSR Magazine and a new book I have coming out called Shift Happens, we know that stuff is going to happen. You know, to Scott's point, I use the word shift instead of a different word so that I'm not swearing as often. But shift does happen, and it's how we quickly navigate that really makes a difference on our success. So thank you for joining today. Again, if you like this, please share, subscribe, and comment. And we'll see you all next Thursday, 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.